This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And welcome to another edition of More Outdoors. Here's the situation. It's Saturday morning in January. A frontal system approaching the metro New Orleans area. Going to be here shortly with some rough winds and rain and dropping the temperatures drastically to tomorrow. Those winds will persist, so probably, yeah, you can hunt. Fishing, not so much. Maybe in a freshwater pond somewhere, but you're going to get a lot of rain and the rivers will be high. Even the marsh areas could have some muddy water in them. So that being said, we got the last couple days of duck hunting, Martha, in the coastal zone today and tomorrow. One more week goes for the eastern zone, and then it's wait till next year again. You know, and has been looking back at it, a below average season for everybody. There's been some bright spots, been some dark spots, and been a few surprises, and I think one of the surprises has been the rebound of the amount of diving ducks that have been in Louisiana, particularly here in the second split as it closes. A lot of people are now concentrating on taking divers because that's what's there.
That's what's there for sure. Speaking of other things that are there, if you're in Lafayette, that's the area that's getting pounded right now. Baton Rouge is next. Storm system's moving pretty quick. So if you have a radar app in your phone and you're out hunting or fishing, be mindful that it's moving in fairly quickly.
And that means you get to go out behind it maybe later on. There's going to be some wind shift.
Oh, yeah.
There's usually a little period of calm winds right behind it.
The cold's not really going to get here till tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning, yeah. That's when I'll be in a deer stand. All right, let's talk to Chris Pike. He's out there casting blast charters, wrapping up the season. He's been out there. Chris, have you hunted just about every day of the 60-day season, or did you miss any?
I missed Christmas Day and New Year's, maybe one or two in between, but that was about it.
I can't believe that. Christmas and New Year's, little things like that, you missed duck hunt? Come on.
Well, you know, I got...
And that was probably only because you didn't have anybody to book them.
That's about it.
Right, so yeah, well, you never get those Christmas mornings back with your kids. Once they move on, it's over, you know, so it's very important. Well, Chris, what's it look like, man? You got some hard weather coming from the west and the north coming a little bit later on.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cloud line. Where is it right now? Is it a good bit west of us?
Lafayette is the leading edge. If you're further north of that, though, where are you right now?
Delacro.
He's in Delacro.
Yeah, you got a little while. It's not going to be to you for a while, so I think you'll probably be able to get in and out.
Well, good.
Yeah, I'd say by 9. If you're still out there by 9 o'clock, I'd get moving if I were you.
we got about 10 right now, so I don't think we'll be out here late. We're having a good hunt. A lot of divers this morning, but I got 4 model ducks and the rest bluebills, so... we're going to try to get I got 4 guys, so we're going to try to get our 3 bluebills apiece, and then hopefully, you know, maybe a couple other teal or, you know, some grays or something. But, one more day, and it's a shame we're getting the best weather of the year when it closes.
But yeah, true. You know, Chris, ringnecks. I got the flyover report, and there's a lot of ringnecks in the state this year and in our southeast area, and I think a lot of people just don't realize it. They think they're bluebills. What do you use as a mark when you see a bird to identify it as a ringneck as opposed to a bluebill or a dogri or a scaup, whatever you want to call them?
I find the scaup have a little bit more of a, I guess you could call it like a hood on their head. It makes more of a square on the front part of their head that kind of identifies it for me. I don't know how to explain it. I guess it's more of a box, you know, front part of their head when they're flying as opposed to the ringnecks I find. But usually with the ringnecks, you can see that little bit of white on their beak, you know, when they're closer to you. But, yeah, I think I saw the report. Hold on, I got some coming in right here. Get ready, guys. I'm about to hear some shots here. All right, get them.
Good, we love it. We love action.
Get them.
them all. All three.
Nice.
Good job.
What'd you get?
Yeah, that was three scalp, all males. And Don, you were talking about the greater scalp the other day. We actually shot one this week.
We did.
Well, to my best identification, it was a greater. It was a good bit bigger than the regular size.
Yeah.
You know, degree we've been
was
shooting.
Was it a drake or a hen?
It was a drake. Is there any other way to tell besides the size of them, if it's a greater or lesser?
Yeah, there's a little bit more of a color variation on them. It's got a lot more greenish on its head than the purplish. You know, it's kind of got the combination on it. It's an iridescent color. The ones I recall always had a little bit more greenish tint than the purple. But, boy, they're very close in color. It's just the size. And it's usually dramatic, unless it was a young greater scalp, and then, you know, still might have been a little bit difficult to tell the difference.
Right here.
But they still include the same way in your bag. I got a bird coming in. Get him.
Two more. So that's, we got 11 scalp.
Who you got shooting there, man? You got Jesse and Frank James in the blind. Those guys are knocking them out. Who are those guys?
I got a young kid named Dylan, and he is putting a smackdown on this morning. How old are you, Dylan? 14 years old. Look, she's doing this
morning. Awesome.
They're having a good time. We decide to set up on
the bluegill. Might have to name him Matt Dillon, huh?
All right, that's it. All right, good deal.
Done?
We're done on the bluebells. We're going to wait on some teal or some grays, hopefully. But, what we decided to do today is shoot for the divers, and then tomorrow we're going to set up on some. You know, hopefully we'll get some gray ducks and teal and all with that front coming. So that's the plan for tomorrow.
So what are you going to do Monday?
Sleep.
Monday, I'm going to sleep. And No, I took all of next week off. So I'm recuperating all next week.
Well, you deserve it, man. That's a long, hard season, you know?
Yeah, it's been a lot more work this year than any year I've ever had, you know, just trying to stay on these ducks we've got, and it hasn't been big concentration. So we've been just moving constantly, and it's been a lot of effort on all of us this year. So, hopefully next year we'll do it again and have a little bit better population down here, because this marsh is in great shape, a lot of feed, and I just don't know why they didn't show up for us this year, but we'll get back on them next year.
You know, I think the most logical explanation I've heard is that everything is wet everywhere. There's been a lot of rain. Rivers are high. It's flowing into swamps and gone on to the agricultural fields. I just think the birds that we have are scattered. They've just got other places where normally they wouldn't go.
Yeah, and, if you think about it, I've been noticing for the last few years, when we get a cold front, they seem to dip from that northwest or, come strictly from the west. We don't get these real due south dips in that, cold weather like we're having with this front. You just don't see a lot of those lately anymore, it seems like. And I think that has a lot to do with it. Until you get a true front coming from due north or, a little bit of northwest, you just don't get a lot of freezing stuff up north to push these ducks down here. But, hopefully tomorrow will be a little bit different. Everybody can end up on a great hunt, and we'll look forward to next year. But it's been fun. We've worked for it, but we shot a lot of limits this year. A lot of divers this second split, but it's been fun.
Well, this year certainly we all remember how cold it got with the snow and ice last year. We were into the cold that we're going to get tomorrow. 2 weeks prior to this week. So certainly it was colder north of us this year. It just hasn't been cold.
But Chris makes a good point with those fronts from the west.
They don't bring as much cold air.
No, well, they don't bring ducks. Ducks don't migrate west to east. They migrate north and south. And if you got those Arctic blasts and those heavy, hard pushes from north to south, That's what tends to bring birds in, not those western fronts. They're good to keep storms out in the summer, you know, but it's the El Nino effect. But in the wintertime, I'm not a big fan of it.
Yeah, well, I think what
Chris, we hope you
– Real quick, I think what happens with those northwest fronts and west fronts is when they come through, I think we get a lot of those birds from East Texas, and that seems to be why they move the next day. You know, we get the birds for 1 or 2 days, and then everybody wonders where they went. And I think that's what happens is they just move back, you know, a little bit northwest, and that's the game they play with that. But I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you for having me on this year, and I look forward to next year if you'll have me again.
Oh, look, we love talking with you, and you know.
Make sure you get some of that mean green to get that dirt out from under your nails.
The marsh hands, get rid of the marsh hands.
I'm about to send you a picture of my hands.
You do that.
Do that.
All right, thank you all very much.
Okay, Chris, y'all have fun.
Pack up and get out there before the weather comes.
Yeah, get those last few birds and get out of there. And we'll see you next time, buddy.
Sounds good. Thank y'all.
All right, Captain Chris Pike, one of the real stalwarts, man. He's highly after that duck hunting. All right, we come back after this. We'll take you out to some more duck blinds. Maybe take you up to Catahoula area, find out with Blake Swallow. We got Captain Darren Digby standing by. He's up next right here on More Outdoors, coming back after this timeout. And welcome back into More Outdoors. So we're taking a little trip around some of our duck blinds across the coastal areas. We wrap up the duck season for coastal area. Tomorrow is the final day. One more week for the East Zone hunters, and, boy, we got some weather moving in, and hopefully it's bringing some ducks in for the guys that got out there and braved it. One of them is Captain Darren Digby, who's been reporting with us since the beginning of the season. He's back out there this final weekend. Darren, where are you hunting today?
Hey, good morning. This morning we are in an undisclosed North Shore public marsh. Watch your backside, watch your backside. Coming around. And it was red hot to start. Stay down, stay. The red hot to start. We had a little lull, and now we're starting to see it pick back up here. Got a few birds working.
So is this the first you've seen that many birds, maybe given it this front system, this hard front that's coming?
I just haven't really been over here much this season, actually at all this season, but I've kind of kept my finger on it from a distance because I had some friends kind of poking around over this way, killing a few. So yesterday I came out and had a look around a little bit, found a few ducks here and there. So I said, well, what the heck, we'll give it a try, go for a change of scenery. And sure enough, man, right off the bat, it was happening. We had a pretty good little teal flight coming real close. And we've got five birds on the strip right now, two green wings, a pretty drake blue wing, and a pair of mottled ducks.
Not bad at all. I saw that we had kind of a little resurgence in the number of mottled ducks. And, you know, those are not based on any weather conditions. I mean, they're born, raised, and die here in Louisiana. And that's some good news, and I'm glad to hear you seeing some in that marsh right there on the north side.
Yeah, and, you know, it always puzzled me that, you know, as a whole, the species hasn't been doing too great, I guess largely due to some marsh degradation or maybe some of the drought we had in the past few years, particularly in southwest Louisiana. But I've always told you know, folks like Larry Reynolds and others, you know, with the department, that over here in this area in southeast Louisiana, there are certain areas you go to where they are just prolific. I mean, they just chock-a-block. What I've seen is that they've taken a particular interest in some of these restoration areas that are all along the North Shore these days, where it's kind of created some really dense habitat. And, man, during teal season, if you go kicking around in there, they are just everywhere in there. Fix it. So, giving them some really good habitat.
A lot of people are not familiar with what you're talking about, but what has been going on is on some of the national wildlife refuges, they, hey, if you got to take a shot, do it. But on some of the national wildlife refuges, including, here we go.
Yeah, we got some working, but go ahead now.
Anyway, on the National Wildlife Refuges, they've been doing some restoration projects, and what they're doing is they're basically going out and dredging up lake bottom silt and bringing it in and filling in some of the open bays and bigger ponds in there. What has been the result? What has happened? Has it become hard ground? Has it sprout up vegetation? What's been the end result of those efforts?
there are really some interesting places to go poking around if for those that are willing to do it. But yeah, like you said, they levy it off and fill it in with sediment dredge from the lake bottom, and it is rock hard in general in there. Where what's above water, and they do leave some areas with water, but what's above the water line and what's viewed as land for the most part is rock hard. It's a lot of sand, as you might imagine, as it was pulled from the lake bottom. And it grows some just really, really dense stands of vegetation. So it's like a whole different type of habitat, but it's surrounded in a different, you know, another habitat, our usual kind of brackish marsh we have here. So, you know, maybe a lot of it is not of use to ducks because it's land, but for birds like mottled ducks that can kind of interact with the fringes of it, you know, be in some water and then kind of maybe crawl up in there and make a nest in the bushes, it's really a valuable place to have around here.
You know, I know of one that was done, oh, I'm going to say at least 5 or 6 years ago, and I haven't returned to it to watch it, and I kind of had I was thinking it was going to sink back down again and become soggy again, but what you're telling me is no, it's going to remain pretty much high, hard ground in there and, you know, and really sprout some vegetation to become really good habitat, which is maybe a good lesson learned about some of our other marshes as far as what the impacts of sediment dredging and filling will do as opposed to trying to get it from the river.
Yeah, and I would imagine, you know, that's always been the argument against dredging is just the cost. So I'd imagine it would be exorbitantly expensive to go filling in some of these larger bays we've got now that have used to be small and now they're, you know, very large following storms. But man, it's extremely effective. And from what I've seen from some of the projects that are a little older now, a little more mature, they're extremely storm resistant. I mean, even when storms come through, you go in there after and they stand tall. It's just a vegetation type takes hold in there that's pretty hardy. You've got, rather than just grasses, you've got bushes. It's really a neat area. And, you know, there's been plenty done and there's more planned. So, you know, I think it's doing nothing but good for our area.
Well, you know, then you get politics enters into it because then they're going to say, well, why should we do it at the expense of taxpayers and, you know, the people of Louisiana and wherever this money's coming from to do it, to improve private land for somebody's benefit that's not going to let the public access it. But see, where you're talking, where these projects were done on federal lands, which are owned by the federal government, which is us. So they feel comfortable in restoring those because the public will get their money's worth for any investment that they do. Where on the other hand, if they're going to do it on somebody's private land, then that person all of a sudden says, I'm putting up a gate, you can't come in here. I don't know how well the public's going to sit with that.
Sure, and it's interesting you point that out because while the majority of them are done that I have seen on public land, there are a couple that I know of locally that are predominantly on, or at least partially on private land, areas that were marsh leases or, you know, owned by someone and maybe leased out to somebody for hunting or what have you, where the marsh had opened up. Part of the restoration projects actually took place on that land, and they actually even restored the locations of what was some historical ponds that were in place. If you go back long enough to some really old, not say really old, you know, pre-Katrina, before obviously Katrina changed so much. If you go before those storms, these were ponds that were there and nearly landlocked, but after the storms were just completely ripped out and then have since grown. So there is some exception to that general rule because I have seen some that are on.
I think I know exactly the one you're talking about. We're probably thinking the same area. It's in virtually in the area of close to the Wrigley's by the Intercoastal Waterway. But I think they can sell that to the public because that is hurricane protection.
Sure.
As opposed to just habitat improvement. So, you know, that being said, then there's a greater good for it, and I think they can justify doing it. But, boy, it's sure a sticky, hairy mess, that's for sure.
Sure, I would agree. And like you said, at the very minimum, it's preservation of the region. It's hurricane protection. You know, it's hard to argue with that. Some of these places were just, especially along the North Shore Lake Pontchartrain, there were areas where the levee, the primary lakeshore levee, had breached. And then after that, it's just, you know, that just speeds up all the degradation exponentially. So that was a critical need to restore that levee and protect the marshes, you know, interior of the lakeshore.
You know, I'd like to go back and revisit the very first Christmas tree project on the North Shore. We named it Project Yuletide. I was one of the coordinators of that, and I can remember being waist deep in the marsh building cribs to stack up Christmas trees in there. And I'd like to see what result that has been all these years later now, because that was back in the mid-'80s we did that.
Oh, wow. Well, it'd be hard to tell. You might have trouble finding where you even did those, because where I've seen you know, some remnants of yeah. those structures in place to hold those Christmas trees, you know, they might have been along the lake shore at the time, and now they're 15, 20 yards uh-huh. out in the lake.
Really?
Sadly
yeah.
enough.
Yeah. Well, that's probably the case.
Certain areas.
Well, Darren,
you know, not,
good
not
talking
everywhere.
To you. Yeah. It's been great talking to you this season. I don't know if you're going to be out hunting in the East Zone next week, but I hope you get a good wrap up there where you are. Are you going to be back at it again tomorrow?
Yeah, we plan to come tomorrow, and we're going to sit a while here and just kind of watch the radar on the phone and make sure we get out of here before that gets here. But looks like we've got some time, so we're going to stay put and try it tomorrow. And I do plan to be out there in the East Zone next weekend.
Spoken like a true duck hunter. Thanks, Darren. We appreciate it.
Okay, y'all take care.
Take care.
All right, Darren Digby, one of the guys out there getting those last licks in on this duck season. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back. We're going to open up our phone lines if you'd like to talk. Also, our text line at 870-870 with Representative Garrett Graves. Representative Graves was a mover and driver of a bill called the Modern Fish Act, and he's going to explain what it's all about and what impacts and improvements it may have to recreational fishing. We'll be back to do that right after this pause. You're listening to More Outdoors, Don Dubuque, Martha Spencer, and you right here on WWL FM 105.3 HD2. A little bit later on, we'll be taking you back out to some of the duck blinds, getting duck hunting reports as this weather system moves in from the northwest, and also we'll get to hunt fish talk. We're going to go over some of those proposed changes Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has proposed for the coming year and get your comments on that, and also tell you where you can go to personally comment on those, have your opinion heard on a series of public hearings which is set up all across the state. But right now we welcome in Representative Garrett Graves, who is joining us on this Saturday morning to talk about a bill called the Modern Fish Act. Representative Graves, thanks for taking time to be with us, and thanks on behalf of sportsmen for taking an interest in our particular interests and issues here. I know there's a lot of stuff going on in Washington right now that could sidetrack it, but thanks to your perseverance, we finally got this bill passed. We really appreciate it.
You bet, Don. This is really a historic moment. We've all seen all of these changes in federal fisheries management that has been to the detriment of recreational fishers, whether it has been some of the challenges of red snapper, grouper, amberjack. Certainly red snapper has been the tip of the spear, I think the one that most people have been paying attention to. But I think we all see this as a problem that's going to cascade into other species. So we finally were able to come in and change the law, the mid-1970s law, to make it recognize that recreational fishers are a big part of the overall fishing community, and that we can't just manage fisheries in a way that only benefits commercial fishing. And so this law is, again, it's a big step in the right direction. I think it's going to help to prevent a lot of problems down the road, like we've seen with some of these species.
So for the folks that have been living under a rock and may not have heard of what the Modern Fish Act is, in a little summary, let folks know what this mission is and what it's going to do for the recreational angler.
Sure. So as I mentioned, the fisheries law dating back to the mid-1970s has really been based solely upon commercial fishing. It just really didn't even consider recreational fishing as anything to be managed any differently. So all the fisheries, the science collection, the data, the management strategies, everything was based on just for commercial fishers. And so what we've done is we've changed the law, and we've told the federal fisheries managers, the agencies, to say, look, when you're when you're managing fisheries, number one, get data, allow for your recreational fishers to be able to provide you information with stock assessments and where fish are and where they aren't. Allow them to provide that information to give you better management information. Get together with states like Louisiana that has the LA Creel system, where we have better data, better science to help the federal fisheries managers manage it in a way that makes more sense. We're taking a step back and having the federal government look at things like these allocation programs and taking a fresh look at that to determine if that is the best approach to manage our fisheries. So all sorts of changes that really, and it's, I know this sounds crazy, you know, you talk about people living under a rock, but it's just crazy that our federal fisheries laws never even thought about whether we should be treating recreational fishing and commercial fishing any differently. And so this really comes in and begins providing more tools and better strategies to have a balance in fisheries management.
Garrett, specifically, how do you see these new allocations being made? Will it be based on economics, or will it be based on scientific data as far as which group, whether it be commercial, recreational, the combination of the two, will be the most beneficial to the species itself? What is at the heart of the bill as far as determining these allocations?
Well, so what it does is it opens the door to provide, I guess, better respect or use of a lot of the state data. So I mentioned the LA Creel program. It's a program that the recreational fishers decided to effectively fund themselves. It has much more accurate information and data instead of using these very blunt approaches where the federal government will come in and drag a net in open water and count 50 different species of fish and then just extrapolate it across a huge area of the Gulf. We instead have much more accurate data that is much more sort of geographically assigned. And so don't come in and apply a standard off the coast of Louisiana that it makes sense off the tip of Florida based upon this very blunt net dragging exercise that they went through. Instead, we have very specific regional or geographic data. But look, at the end of the day, Don, this is going to be it's going to help improve access to fish for recreational fishers. It's going to help prevent some of the problems we've seen with the battles between recreational, commercial, and charter fishers. And importantly, I think help to sustain access to fish to where we can keep doing this for years to come and not run into all of the fights and blocking off fish like we've seen in recent years.
Yesterday, we received an email about charter fishermen and the new passing of tracking and logging fish from charters, recreational charters. Is that law or passage of that going to be incorporated in? Is that data that they receive from logging in charter boat, recreational charter boat information, is that going to be included in the numbers that are being used for the recreational angler by the Modern Fish Act? Will they be looking at the same for the same use?
So the law does open up the door to that and allow for the consideration of science that to date has been prevented from even being looked at. So is that going to be the sole tool that governs how we manage fish, where we manage fish, how many fish we can catch? No. Can it be taken into the larger picture to understand the health of different species, where they are, how they're behaving, whether population numbers are going up and down? Yes, it can come in and help to provide a more accurate picture for what's going on.
Garrett, finally, go ahead.
I was just going to say that before there were a lot of restrictions over which data could actually be considered in the federal agencies for management of fisheries. In many cases, you had data that they were just prohibited from using.
Is there anything you would say to the fishermen that they need to do or be aware of, or has this now, being that it's put into law, is pretty much a done deal, and now basically they'll enjoy the fruits of the labor of getting it passed?
Well, Don, you know, I think one of the real problems we ran into just being recreational fishers is that I think a lot of people were just caught off guard with how aggressive some of the federal agency, I guess not some, NOAA, National Marine Fisheries Service, were being with preventing us from being able to go fish. And it caught a lot of people by surprise. It seemed illogical. And I think that while we have made a step in the right direction, we now have recreational fishing on the map in terms of the federal law and fisheries management. We have got to continue speaking up and make it clear that we are a part of federal fisheries. We are people who go enjoy these natural resources that, quite frankly, we own. This is a public resource. And so I don't think we should ever put our guard down after what we saw. There were some very aggressive tactics by people that I think were simply trying to line their own pockets. So I'll say it again. This is a step in the right direction. I think it helps to lay the groundwork for much better fisheries management in the future. But the bill that passed the House was even more aggressive, was even better for recreational fishers. And when it got over to the Senate, they stripped a lot of it out. So we certainly have some improvements we can make. And I just think we have to continue being vigilant and continue being vocal that this is a public resource. We are the public and need to continue to have some type of balance or fair access to these fish moving forward.
Yeah. I work on a charter boat, and I know what a lot of recreational anglers have a huge issue with is these reef permits that are going for big dollars to out-of-state buyers. Do you think that this is hope for even playing fields, whereas these commercial fishermen are getting these huge bounties of fish where we know that there are more red snapper in particular, that's the big issue. Do you think that this will lead to potentially a little more limits or longer fishing days? Because it seems to be, from what I've seen, that they're bountiful. And a lot of people are very frustrated that it's kind of, you know, the fish wars with the folks that have, you know, those permits that can catch
all
the
fish. Yeah,
they
call them the fish barons. They basically owned all of the permits, and then they had people working for pennies, and they sat back and didn't even own a boat or have to get on a boat. It was a ridiculous situation, and they were reaping the benefits. Will this Modern Fish Act address that in any way?
I think that it is going to address it. So what we did in the bill is we sent over to the National Academies and the Government Accountability Office, basically some scientists to take a fresh look at how we manage these fisheries. And y'all have really nailed it on the head. This issue of just taking a public resource, you know, and the way to explain this, it would be like going and just saying, hey, Don, from now on, you get 5% of all the oil in the Gulf of Mexico, and you get it for free, and you get it every year, and you don't even have to work. You can go, you know, live in another country and have somebody else do it for you, and we'll just send you the check. I mean, that's crazy. You would never do that to a public resource like oil or gas or anything else, but it's exactly what we do with fisheries. And so, you know, look, I'll be honest, the bill that passed the House, we were much more aggressive in how we treated this and how we hit this issue head on about giving away a public resource. We don't think it's a fair management strategy. We don't think it's fair to taxpayers. And so this bill, in negotiating with the Senate, we did have to pull it back a bit, but it absolutely provides the opportunity for the National Academies and for the Government Accountability Office to come back and give us recommendations on a more fair strategy for managing these resources, for better access for the public, for rec fishers. I think that it is going to give us an opportunity to ensure that we have fair access in the future and probably give us some better management tools rather than just giving away this very valuable public resource for free.
Yeah, there's still some battles to be won and some ground to take back, but this is certainly a step in the right direction with the Modern Fish Act, no doubt about it. And again, we thank you for your hard work and dedication in getting it. I know it's taken a few years, but it's finally happened, and we really appreciate that.
Well, thank you all, and appreciate all the education that y'all have been doing and just helping to keep people informed.
Thanks again, Representative Garrett. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next time.
You bet. Y'all have a good weekend.
All right, Garrett Graves, representative for the state of Louisiana, basically authoring and getting through the readjustment to what was the Magnuson-Stevenson Act that we've been dealing with for some 40 years now, and finally giving recreational fishermen the due. All right, we come back after this. Let's see if we can catch up with Ryan Lambert, maybe get out into his duck blind and find out exactly what's going on out there. Has he got the dumpster all covered up from the rain? Does he have a few birds in the bag? We'll find out right after this. Martha, can you tell Ryan Lambert what time he needs to put his top up on his convertible duck blind?
He's still in good shape.
Where is it at now?
It's just now getting towards Baton Rouge.
He's got plenty of time. He'll be limited out and home by then. What's going on, Ryan?
That ought to give me 4 hours to make it happen. I'm set up, got my decoys out. I'm waiting on the birds. There are a lot of birds coming in. One pond, the water's real low, not quite as low as yesterday, but they had a lot of birds in one blind I've been hunting. It was just a little low to get in there. It was covered, so I came where I went yesterday because I could get in here. And we'll kill them. There's a lot of birds in the marsh.
What direction do you want to get out there? The wind direction and velocity, what are you getting right now?
It's due south about 18. Now imagine.
Ooh, so you get with
watch these teal coming, guys. Watch these teal. Get ready to kill them on the left side. Right in front. Take them. Get a boat. Ten bass. Got those. Oh, kids,
green wings or blue wings?
These are green wings. I did see quite a few blue wings coming out, though. But big flocks of green wings. It could be a good day. They came right in the decoys with this wind. So I think we'll have a good day. I mean, you could see as far as you could see, it looked like dots in the sky yesterday, and they would just cup up and come on down. Boy, I just like it when it's like that. That makes a nice hunt.
What's that like? I still have yet to have a day like that down there.
Gray ducks, they are the ones that do that. They just decide when they're coming, they just fold their wings and drop.
So they come, there's about 10,000 birds sitting out in Breton Sound. So when they come up and down, they're sky high. And then when they get to where they want to come down, they just cup them down. And, I mean, they was doing that sideways flying. Gosh, I love that so much. You know, when they do a little
bit. I have a random question you might be able to hypothesize on. So Don and I were discussing the Dogries in Lake Pontchartrain the other day, and he said he's been driving over this bridge for 30-plus years. And we both noticed that all the Dogries congregate on the west side of Lake Pontchartrain's bridge, the causeway. They always seem to be on that side. What, you got any ideas?
Well, they eat mullets.
It's very strange.
Little plants and stuff, so maybe that's where the largest concentration of feed is, because that's what makes ducks tick, feed. So, okay. I would imagine that's where the greatest concentration of food is, if that's where they are.
You know, it might have something to do with the tidal action in Pontchartrain. You know, when you get water going out and water coming in, because it's depends on the winds and the tides, the direction of the water movement. And maybe for some reason that those rangia clams, which is what you're talking about, or just accumulate on reefs on the west side because of the way the water flow is. Whoa, something going on there.
Weird guess.
Because redheads and dogries and stuff like that, they eat the mollusk, the little clams and stuff. So that's what it's all about. That's why they're in there. And they can stay there. As long as I got my other ducks here, I'm good with it. I've only shot one dogree this whole season. One dogree and one
of these
spoon ducks. And everything else has been good ducks. Mm-hmm.
You know, I was noticing on the wildlife and fisheries flyover counts, and I'll have to ask Larry Reynolds this, and I've done the flyover with him, but they don't count redheads and they don't count buffleheads.
Really?
I'm wondering if the redheads are too hard to – maybe they just group them in with the scaup or the ringnecks. I don't know. But they don't list them as a species that they count.
That's strange, you know, but because 90% of that species goes to Laguna Madre in Texas and in Mexico. And, you know, there's a bigger concentration there than anywhere in the world. And if you ever go down there and hunt, you'll see, because the flock of 100 would just come. Some people call them stupid. I call them courageous, because they will just they don't flare off like other ducks. They come in and they're going to pass you whether you're shooting or not. So I just love shooting redheads, and it's a beautiful duck, and it's a very good eating duck, too.
Yep. Have you seen a lot of them this year, redheads?
Manuel, Manuel
compared to last few years?
Yesterday. Manuel had the boys out yesterday. They killed six of his blind and a spoony, and the rest gray ducks, I think, they had.
It's a good one.
So, you know, they got them. We just, you got to hunt.
What's your count right now? How many hunters you got?
I've got three with me today.
And you just set up?
Yeah, I just set up, and we just killed those two greenwings right away. They had another flock come on us, but somebody was moving around still at that time, so they flared off. But I'm kind of waiting for the big ducks myself. I'm hoping for some pintails today with this wind in the season with some pintails. So we're going to hunt. We're going to watch the weather. And if the weather comes on, I'm still sitting here. I'll turn the boat around to where the cover can go up and protect us from the rain. And after that, it's going to break loose out here. There'll be birds flying everywhere. Don, you've seen that already.
Yes, I have. I've witnessed that. Yeah. They'll we actually 30, watched the front time. System come in. Yeah. And boy, it got crazy. It was like mosquitoes.
That's a beautiful thing to watch when they start coming off that open water. They'll just come in by the thousands and they'll come into that marsh.
Ryan, how many boxes of shells do you go through in a season?
This year I shot a case and 3/4. Which is
yeah, but you don't shoot much. That much. I mean, you're letting the customers shoot most.
You
of
said you shoot
the
about
last one.
A box.
I shoot after I hear six shots. If I hear boom, 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 then I'll shoot whatever's winged or hit or getting away. You know, you just gotta.
That pintail that I shot back in.
He's been in the guideline with
that pin. I ended up mounting that pintail that I shot, and the taxidermist, he said, let me guess, you shot this bird, knocked it down, but it was trying to get away, and somebody had to go shoot it again. I said, yep. I'm sure you've seen this before. He goes, yeah, we're going to, he said, you wanted this bird to the right. We got to make it go to the left. He's like, it's a JFK bird.
Yeah, he was getting the Bondo out. He was mixing up some Bondo.
Why, was the wad still stuck in him?
No, I knocked it down, but it was getting to the grass, and he went and blasted at close range.
Yeah, he had some head injuries there. Kind of looked like JFK triangulation deal, you know?
We had one like that yesterday, and I told somebody shoot it in the head, and they shot it in the rest of the body. I got it back. It was like jelly. Hmm. I said, okay, we'll breast this one. That happens.
He was able to work with it, so. We'll just have to turn it the other way.
Yep. Kenley's doing real good. She had a problem with that cold tail, and she got squirrely for about a week, but she's back on track, and she'll be back to compete next month. So she'll get her title here shortly. So, and I think Logan had a
you
last
got any,
What's that, Don?
Logan, yeah, Logan's on the last hunt, you said? Or had a
no,
last hunt?
Day before yesterday, we filmed her last retrieve. I think she's not gonna want to, but I think we're gonna hang it up with her because she's old and she has a hard time after the hunt. She's hurting, but you know who knows if I run her off.
Yeah, they don't want to give up.
No, she's not. She'll be 10 next month. So I don't know.
Maybe you could bring her out for a teal hunt or something. You know. Yeah, maybe during teal season when it's warm or something.
If I work her all summer and keep her limber, she'll be all right. But if not, she might have had a last retrieve. And, well, she loves to come, man. I tell you, she can't stand not getting out here with us.
Yeah, like somebody else I know.
One day they're going to do that to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Hey, you got any Mexican trips coming up after this? Does the season go on later down there?
I had one February 3rd that I was going to go on, but I couldn't get a good enough group together, so I'm not going to go. And this is going to be it for me.
Today's
my last time.
February 3rd. Something's going on February 3rd, I think.
Super Bowl.
It's the 4th. No, it's the 3rd. You're right.
Yeah,
so,
right.
There's some sort of game boy.
Yeah, what is this world coming to when people pass up a duck
hunt
for a football
people
game?
People rather sit at home. But they, like they don't have a TV down there or something. But, whatever. Come in. Watch. That's a McGann. They don't shoot that. Don't want the old McGann.
McGann. So, you know, those don't count against your duck limit.
I know, but I'm not going to shoot nothing I'm not going to eat. You know, it's, as much as I like killing them, I still have some morals in the game.
You could always put them in gumbo or get some sausage.
What's it, about 70 degrees down there?
No, it's cooler than that because the river water's 40-something. So, you know, I imagine it's about 60 here. It's nice. I even have a little coverall on. So it's pretty nice. The wind's blowing. It's beautiful. I think as soon as they start flying,
has Carmen booked you a manicure yet for the postseason?
What's that?
I don't think he heard
no.
you.
No. I said, has Carmen booked you a manicure for the postseason yet?
No, but I got a surgery. That's the same thing.
Yeah. So, for a duck hunter, it is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to make an exit here. Hope you get your limit today and wrap it up tomorrow. And, you know, we'll be talking fishing from here on out for a while.
Yep, I'm going to wrap it up today, and I'll be having withdrawals tomorrow, but I'll watch the tape and go home and relax a little while.
All right, y'all, my friend. Take it easy.
All right, y'all have a good one.
All right. All right, coming up after the CBS Sports Update, we're going to get a couple more journalists in here. Keith Lusher, host of North Shore Fishing Report, and Wendy Billiott, Hunt Fish Talk, up next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.